Did you know that collagen makes up 30% of the protein in your body? It's the substance that gives structure, support, and strength to your skin, muscles, bones, and connective tissues. Collagen is what keeps our skin firm and youthful, preventing it from sagging. It also supplies amino acids that are crucial for building healthy hair and protecting hair follicles. The collagen supplement that I use and recommend to my patients is Revive by Bright Core Nutrition. Revive combines five types of collagen with hyaluronic acid and biotin to heal and nourish your skin, hair, and nails. Studies show that collagen also helps relieve joint inflammation and pain. If you're looking to heal your body from the inside out and reverse some effects of aging, Revive could be your answer. For more information and to order, visit mybrightcore.com/Hoffman. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman or call 888-592-9909. That's 888-592-9909. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, buy two bottles of Revive and get one free, plus a collagen sheet mask as a free gift. That's mybrightcore.com/Hoffman for Revive Multi-Collagen Protein. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's guest is Nathan Jones from Clear Inc., X-L-E-A-R. Nate is an entrepreneur. He is the CEO of Clear, X-L-E-A-R, Clear Inc., makers of nasal spray products and also dental products. You can find out about them at clear.com. But currently, he is a champion for our right to obtain, clear and truthful information, on the health front. And he's been crusading on behalf of, practitioners across the spectrum. He currently has a case before the FTC, and this is, yet another podcast in the continuing saga of Clear versus the FTC. The FTC wants to throttle down legitimate claims made by Clear, but Nate Jones isn't simply rolling over, as many companies do. They go along to get along, withdraw their claims, and try to fly under the radar. Nate Jones is undertaking a very, very powerful campaign to open up the floodgates for truthful information. So, we've got a lot to talk about today, Nate. It's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine.
Well, it's always good to be here.
Indeed. And considering the alternative, right? No, that's a joke. It's always good to be here. Clear just filed a motion in their case that would restrict the FTC from censoring companies in the future. And this is, you know, and I want to just emphasize, this is not just a selfish initiative, because Clear could have, you know, done some legal wrangling and kind of schmoozed their way out of a confrontation with the federal government, the very, very deep pockets that the FTC has in prosecuting companies to try to make them withdraw claims about their supplements. You know, they actually, there's a saying for this, is that the process is the punishment. They don't necessarily have to win, but they can drag you through the courts. It can take years. It can cost millions of dollars. It can also exact an emotional toll. But Nate Jones is pushing back. And so tell us about your progress in that case, because I'm very optimistic that you may likely prevail.
I'm actually fairly optimistic. Like, I mean, I don't see how we could possibly lose. I mean, it's that clear cut, in my opinion. Granted, the courts maybe disagree, but I don't see this case getting resolved without it going to the Supreme Court, unless the FTC acknowledges that they cannot go after people and they can't censor companies for making truthful statements. And the way the law is written, the FTC is supposed to actually prove us wrong or prove that the statements we're making are false and misleading. And what the FTC is, they've come back and they've said, no, you have to prove that the statements that you're making are true, and you have to do it in the exact way that we want you to, or it's false and misleading. And the FTC doing that over the years, and especially with the companies that they were censoring during COVID, has harmed, if not outright killed, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people here in America. And that's the antithesis of their motto, which is protecting the American consumer. So, yeah, it's not that I want to be a crusader. It's that somebody has to stand up to this gross overreach that's harming people.
Indeed. And so just boil it down for us. Could you give us just the you know, like a elevator pitch about, you know, what this case is about, and, you know, what their contention is, and, you know, how they're fundamentally wrong in what they're charging?
So they sued us saying that we were making false and misleading statements. And were the false and misleading statements that they say are false and misleading, they're actually admitting that they're not false and misleading. It's just they're not substantiated the way they wanted them substantiated. And where it comes down to is in early 2020, you know, when COVID first started going crazy, you know, we had some doctors that were using our product, and they called us and said, hey, we're using these products and we're seeing some really good results. You should have a lab look and see what's going on. And before I go further on this, I should probably point out that the CDC on its webpage prior to 2020 and up until about the end of 2021, middle of 2022, The CDC, the Center for Disease Control, they actually had on their website that the way to treat a respiratory coronavirus infection was by using salt water, saline irrigation, saline nasal sprays, neti pots, and whatnot, to physically reduce the viral load in the nose. So that was the CDC's official guidance.
Clear nasal spray is saline, but saline with a secret sauce. It contains xylitol, and I also believe it contains some grapefruit seed extract, which may have additional benefits in terms of suppressing pathogens. So in effect, you know, if you would have been better off just making saline nasal spray, because...
They would have gone after us anyways, because they sent warning letters to all the companies in the industry.
Okay.
They sent them to NeoMed. They sent them to Navage. It wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah.
The crazy part is that the FTC is so obtuse. It's so, I don't know that hubristic. The hubris that the FTC has is, we said you're wrong. It doesn't matter if the CDC thinks you're right. It doesn't matter if the FDA thinks you're right. We said you're wrong, therefore you're wrong. And we're going to sue you until you acknowledge that you are wrong.
Because it's like one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing in this case in terms of the branches of the federal government. I have
and not
here,
only that, it's lawyers. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I have here actually the complaint, and it's a beautifully crafted complaint. That, you know, I really want to commend your attorney, and I hope that also I think you got some good ideas.
You're not reading from the complaint.
I'm sorry.
Is what the FTC was.
Exactly. I'm not.
You're reading from the motion to have it dismissed and thrown out.
Correct. It's the defendant's motion for judgment on the pleadings in the United States District Court, District of Utah. Okay. So so I think the arguments in it are very ingenious, but here's actually one of the more interesting arguments that your attorney makes. Essentially, what he's saying is, I mean, the thrust of this is that it's an abridgment of First Amendment rights, you know, the rights to free speech. But also, the claim is that the FTC doesn't really have the statutory authority to demand two double-blind placebo-controlled trials for every claim that's made, that's arbitrary. But this is interesting. They actually pulled up some case law, and the Seventh Circuit, in a case that the FTC was involved with, stated this: nothing in the Federal Trade Commission Act, the act that empowers the FTC, requires placebo-controlled double-blind studies. The act forbids false and misleading statements. And then the court provides an illustrative example. Think about the seller of an adhesive bandage treated with a disinfectant such as iodine. The seller does not need to conduct tests before asserting that this product reduces the risk of infection from cuts. The bandage keeps foreign materials out of the cuts and kills some bacteria. It may be debatable how much the risk of infection falls, but the direction of the effect would be known, and the claim could not be condemned as false. And so that's an, I mean, they've not done double-blind placebo-controlled trials for iodine-saturated adhesive bandages, nor will they ever demand placebo-controlled trials for parachutes. They work. They make sense. It's follow the science.
And that double-blind, that double-blind random controlled trial standard that the FTC is trying to impose on the supplement and the natural products and the hygiene industry is actually a much higher bar than what the FDA is trying to impose on the pharmaceuticals, which to me is so absurd that it begs, I mean, maybe the people that work at the FTC had too much fluoride when they were growing up.
Oh, we'll talk about that in a minute, but this is interesting too. The follow-up to that statement that I read from defendant's motion, your attorney's motion, is about the COVID vaccine. Now, the COVID vaccine, the fact is that the COVID vaccine was initially approved without the requirement that double-blind placebo-controlled trials need to be undertaken. Their updated COVID-19 vaccine produced a strong immune response, which is a surrogate marker for it works, without testing whether it was actually efficacious in live subjects. They gave it the green light. So this is really, as you say, there's a double standard.
And hang on, should I add in there?
Please.
That now that we've actually read what the Pfizer papers, that they knew, the FDA and Pfizer and those guys, they knew from day one that the data that Pfizer provided to the government was not quite on the up and up. And the second round of it, the FDA went ahead and approved it based on six mice, I think it was. And so they just did a study on six mice, and then they approved it for the next round, for the first, what do they call the next generation? Boosters.
Right. So in other words, it was theoretically beneficial, but without a thorough road test. So clearly we're talking about a double standard, and I'm glad that your attorney brought that up because, look, I think, FTC is not going to agree with this argument, but I think when you put this to a judge or if you have a jury trial, reasonable people will say, hey, wait a minute, FTC, you can't have it both ways.
Well, I'm depending on the reliability of intelligent people here in the state of Utah.
Indeed. Well, so it's in the District of Utah District Court. All the best in your continuing saga. And, I just want to say, as president of the Alliance for Natural Health, we fight these causes wherever we find them, to enable people to have access to products and health services of their choice. We have an overregulated nutritional supplement economy, and we have an overregulated practitioner economy when products that are homeopathic, for example, natural bioidentical hormone replacement therapy is also on the chopping block. Supplements like NNN are also on the chopping block. Formerly N-acetylcysteine was on the chopping block, but we've won at least a temporary stay on its elimination from health food stores. These are causes that are worth upholding, I think it's also very much in line with what's happening, make America healthy again. Like him or not, RFK Jr., I think, is bringing up, some important issues about how big pharma, big food, big agriculture are limiting, Americans' choice with the collaboration, the active collaboration of the government, and the Orthodox medical establishment.
And I actually agree with that. I think that there's a huge need to have someone go in there and just re-examine the relationship between the FDA and the pharmaceutical companies, the USDA and the food producers. I mean, why would you let the food producers actually make your nutritional pyramid and your nutritional guidelines? I mean, that to me just boggles my mind. My fear with it, though, is that they're going to start focusing so much on the food and the vaccines that they're going to neglect the rest of what needs to happen to make America healthy. And what I'm referring to is obviously what we do, which is, and we've been doing it for 25 years, is pushing to make sure that our gateway microbiomes, our nose and our mouth, where most of the pathogens enter our body, making sure that that's healthy so that those pathogens don't get into our body. So I hope that's included in there, and public health is also included in there.
Yeah, so let's focus on a subject that you wanted to bring up, because recently, for a newsletter article, I talked about how fluoridation is suddenly being highlighted by studies suggesting that, A, it's not that efficacious, and B, that there may be serious risk associated with high levels of fluoride. This is a subject that is near and dear to you because you make a product that demonstrably reduces dental caries, and yet it's not added to the drinking water of every American, nor do you probably suggest that it be mandated for community water supplies. You just make it available as a product, the Spry Dental Defense System, that involves, pastilles and mouthwashes and gum, various ways to introduce xylitol into the mouth.
Yeah. And that's interesting because, so let me give some background on that. But in the state of California, which is a pretty liberal state, they actually came back and said that the EPA needs to go back and revisit the amount of fluoride that they can put in the water, because the Cochrane Group, which, for listeners who don't know, they're a group that does meta-analysis. So they go and they look at lots and lots of studies, and then they put together a meta-analysis of those. And historically, the Cochrane Group has been very pro-fluoride.
Mm-hmm. They're very conservative. They're not exactly firebrands. They're not like writing for, wellness magazines. They're very mainstream and conservative. But the one thing you can say about the Cochrane Group is they're pretty clean in terms of pharmaceutical influence. They're not on the tape. They're relatively independent scientists and researchers.
Correct. But they actually came out with a paper that was used in this case. And really what they said is that the best that they could see is that if you put fluoride in the water, the best that you're going to get is maybe a 4% reduction in tooth decay.
Mm-hmm.
And that they need to revisit that because the negative effects, the drop in IQ, the osteoporosis, and some of these other systemic issues that come from the use of fluoride, all of that would probably be worse than having 1/4 of a tooth less cavity, I guess, is what they're saying. And I agree with that. But the bigger question that was never asked in all of these papers that I was looking at and what all these dentists are responding to this is, why is it that 50, 60, 70 years ago when they were doing these studies, did they say that using fluoride toothpaste, using fluoride in your water, and getting fluoride varnishes would reduce tooth decay by 25%? That's the accepted. It's anywhere from 20 to 30, so let's say 25%. Right. And if you ask me, I think that's ridiculous that the dental industry and the CDC and the FDA, they've hung their hat on fluoride being the only tool that you can use to prevent tooth decay, which is absurd. If at best it's going to reduce tooth decay by 25%, you can use hydroxyapatite, which remineralizes your teeth, better than fluoride does. You can use trimethoxazole, which is what we use, that remineralizes your teeth better than fluoride does. But here in the United States, if you make a claim for being an anti-cavity toothpaste or any oral care product, if you want to say it's anti-cavity, you have to have fluoride between 900 and 1100 parts per million.
Right.
That's the standard. And that's the only thing that you can use. And that's just absurdly crazy that it only works 25%. But the bigger part that I think is just mind-bogglingly absurd is if you go and you talk to the people that are in favor of fluoride, that support fluoride, the dental industry, and ask them and say, does fluoride actually treat the bacterial infection that causes tooth decay? And the answer is no. Okay, you had a researcher that went through, and his name's Marsh, and you can go find some, and it's negligible the amount, the effect that using fluoride has on the strep mutans bacteria.
Yeah, it's merely sort of an armor coat for tooth enamel. It sort of coats the tooth enamel. You know, like if you buy a new car, you know, they said they want to sell you on like a body coat, you know, to preserve the paint job. So that's a little bit what fluoride is supposed to do.
It's supposed to make the enamel stronger. So all they're really doing is saying, okay, we're going to make your teeth more resistant to tooth decay. We're not going to do anything for the actual infection of strep mutans bacteria in your mouth. We're just going to let that bacterial infection fester and grow. We're just going to have you work and get your teeth harder so that they don't remineralize and don't have cavities. You're still going to have all the other associated illnesses. You're going to have gum disease, periodontal disease, all these other diseases, but your tooth decay, your enamel is going to be more resistant to that acid, and so it's not going to rot away. And that is what they've hung their hat on, something that doesn't even address the bacterial infection. And we've known for 50 years that that's what xylitol does. Xylitol works as a prebiotic. It gets rid of the strep mutans bacteria, the acid-creating bacteria in your mouth. You can do the same thing with erythritol. You can do the same thing with dental probiotics if you want to use them on a regular basis. You can do it with xylitol. All of those are actually addressing the bacterial infection of strep mutans in the mouth. But yet, nobody can make a claim for any of those products being able to prevent tooth decay.
You know, a concern, too, is, you know, we're getting fluoride six ways to Sunday. We're putting it in the drinking water. Then in manufacturing facilities where they make products with water, we're getting more fluoride, perhaps concentrated fluoride, because there may be a process by which in using water for food production, the fluoride content gets concentrated. So we're getting it in our, you know, our soft drinks and our beer, in our, you know, all products made with municipal water supplies that are fluoridated. Also, we're putting it in toothpaste. You know, you've raised a couple of little kids, and you know the kids are notoriously bad about spitting out toothpaste, particularly with the nice flavors that they have now in kids' toothpaste. They swallow it.
Yeah.
So they're getting more systemically. Then they go to the pediatric dentist, and the dentist says, hey, for, you know, just a few extra dollars, we'll give you... Yeah, we're going to do a fluoride, what's called... Yeah, I didn't know that the term was fluoride varnishing. So we're going to add some more fluoride. We're going to actually coat your teeth with fluoride. The threshold that they've determined that is the safe threshold was for water, not for all these other additional sources of fluoride. Anything...
Not only that. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a very narrow window of toxicity for fluoride. What that means is that the efficacy is quickly outweighed by its toxicity when you get past a certain concentration. So they think the concentration is 0.16, but at 0.32, what they're seeing is, and this is from a recent report, a National Toxicology Program monograph, concluded that higher levels of fluoride exposure, such as drinking water containing more than 1.5 milligrams of fluoride per liter, are associated with, get this, lower IQ in children. Oh, my goodness.
And that is why I live in a city where they do not fluoridate the water. But I wanted to throw something in there.
Please.
Because the people that are getting harmed in this. The people that are getting too much fluoride, they're not the people that the fluoride, the putting water in the fluoride is targeted for, because public health, they put it in the water so that it helps everybody. Okay? So that even the people that aren't going to the dentist, or the people that aren't listening to the dentist and not doing what the dentist says, they are getting enough fluoride for it to help with their teeth. So tell me what's happening to the people that listen to the dentist, that get the varnishes, that take the fluoride tablets, that brush with fluoride toothpaste. They're the ones that are doing what their dentist says, the ones that are being proactive. They're the ones that are going to get, you know, fluoride fluorosis, which is fluoride toxic levels of fluoride.
Indeed. And
so the people that are doing what the dentist says, they are the ones that are going to get poisoned.
And that's a very good point, because, you know, the least common denominator is for, you know, people perhaps who are of less means, maybe they have lower health literacy or dental literacy, so they're not as proactive about, you know, dental hygiene, and, you know, getting all these treatments. So, you know, it in effect, you know, it penalizes people who are conscientious. So talk about the role of xylitol in the spry products, and, you know, talk about the products and what they do, and, you know, how they can be administered, and can they be used in, you know, very small children? Are they safe?
Yes, they're all safe. I mean, I've been giving them to my kids since they were babies. We actually have a tooth gel that was developed when my kids were babies, that you just put drops on their binkies, on their pacifiers, after they eat, because what you're trying to do is get rid of all of the sugars that are in their mouth from milk, so that it doesn't ferment in their mouth and create that acid. But what the xylitol does, so let me go back and explain this, is you, in your mouth, you have strep mutans bacteria. Strep mutans is a bacteria, it eats 6 carbon sugars like sucrose, glucose, fructose. It even eats sorbitol, mannitol, maltitol, the sweeteners that are in most of your sugar-free gum. And it metabolizes that, and it makes acid. And that acid is what dissolves the enamel. And so once you understand that that's how that happens, you have to have the carbohydrate, you have to have the bacteria, and you have to have the substrate, which is the enamel. And so what we're trying to do is, if you take away the sugar, the 6 carbon sugars, and replace it with xylitol, a 5 carbon sugar, the strep mutans bacteria, and we know this from thousands of studies that have been done over 50 years, the strep mutans bacteria cannot metabolize xylitol. It looks like sugar to them, and it will take it into the cell, and then they have to, it's called phosphorylation, but it's where they kick it back out of the cell. And then they'll eat it again, and it's the futile cycle, because it'll eat it and kick it back out, eat it, kick it back out. And within a couple of months, you've changed the entire microbiome in your mouth to bacteria that don't create acid, a much healthier microbiome. And the study that they did down in Belize, and we've talked about this on this show before, they actually went down and they had kids use xylitol gum, one piece, in the morning when they got to school, after lunch, and one before they went home. And they only did it on days that they had school. They didn't do it on the weekends. They didn't do it in the summer. But they changed the microbiome in their mouth, and over the course of that 2 years, they had a negative incidence of tooth decay. That was done by the University of Michigan Dental School. About 8 years later, so 10 years after the study started, the University of Washington Dental School went back down to do a follow-up study, and the kids who'd used the xylitol gum that 2 years, 8 years prior to when they came down, they still had over 75% fewer cavities.
So there was a persistent effect. There was a persistent effect,
yeah.
A lasting effect.
Yeah. You change that microbiome, and, you know, unless you're going to go out there and, you know, start swapping saliva with someone that has really bad oral hygiene, you're not going to be exposed to that strep mutans bacteria again. It's a communicable. People don't grasp this as much as they should, but tooth decay is a communicable disease. We know that the bacteria in our mouth, the strep mutans bacteria, we get it from our parents, we give it to our children. And there's a number of studies out there where they've shown this quite on point, where they have the parents use xylitol when they're pregnant. The mother, you know, when she's pregnant, she uses xylitol. And the kids don't get tooth decay.
And well, because there's a lot of kissy face going on with Junior, right?
Oh, 100%. And you know, you'll pick the binky up off the floor, you'll stick it in your mouth, and we've all done this. You stick it in your mouth, clean it off, and stick it in the baby.
Yeah.
That's the way we are. We give our microbiome to our children, and if we get rid of that strep mutans, that cariogenic bacteria in our mouth, we don't have it to give to our kids. And there have been a number of studies that show this. I'm absolutely appalled that our public health agencies aren't out there pushing and telling, especially pregnant women, to chew xylitol gum.
Instead, they're pushing fluoridation as the sole measure by which we can prevent tooth decay in terms of ingesting a substance. They tell you to floss, they tell you to brush, you know, all those things. But this is still controversial because, you know, we have dentists who will listen to Intelligent Medicine, and sometimes they're outraged when we challenge the fluoridation paradigm. But there's good evidence that, you know, look, they point out that the incidence of dental decay has declined. And it has. It has since, you know, the 1900s. But there's a lot of things that have happened. There's been changes in sanitation. There have been changes in, you know, the way we approach dental hygiene. Your average cowboy in, you know, a Western that you watch on TV or in a movie theater did not brush and floss. No. And the quality of food is different then, too.
You should clarify something. That from the 1800s until about 1980s, the incidence of tooth decay was going down.
Going down anyway.
Since then, it has actually been coming back up.
Yeah.
Significantly. And to the point that in 2000, the Surgeon General, David Satcher, they actually wrote like a 380-page treatise, I guess, Surgeon General warning to the people of the United States that the status of our oral health was declining so quickly that it was, you know, that it was becoming it was going in reverse. And it was just, I'd have to come back with the exact year, but the way they report tooth decay now is, now they don't report the incidence of tooth decay, they only report untreated caries.
Hmm. What's that about?
And in 2021, the current Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, and Francis Collins, and a dentist by the name of Souza, they actually wrote a follow-up to that and pointed out that still, in 2021, 21 years after Satcher had written his, nothing had changed with the state of oral care. It was still declining. And these three guys, they didn't suggest, hey, maybe we should get out there and talk about addressing tooth decay, because we have plenty of different ways to talk about it. The only thing that's constricting the United States' ability to counteract tooth decay is the government regulations that stop us from talking about it.
Indeed.
But what they said is rather than going and doing and utilizing cash and money and resources to actually change the habits and prevent tooth decay, they only suggested that we needed to put a couple $1 billion into more research to find more ways to prevent tooth decay that we can also ignore.
Yeah. Well said. All right, good stuff.
And,
we're going to
let me put in there one more thing.
Okay. Cuz I was going to suggest that we've only
1 minute.
Okay, go.
And then we can go on to the next.
Yep.
But what this is that we have actually done the math on it, and we know that for about $25, maybe $30 a year, per student, you would be able to reduce tooth decay to practically zilch and reduce respiratory infections in children by 42%. And you could do this for $25 to $30 a year per child. It makes 100% fiscal sense. Monetary makes complete sense. Here in the state of Utah, we actually offered to give the state gum to start the programs, and they refused to do it because they want to make sure that everybody has equal access to the doctors and the dentists. So they don't want to take any money from those coffers to do any preventative programs.
It sounds like a backwards approach to healthcare. I just want to give people a heads up because the Clear Nasal products are available at Walgreens, CVS, Vitamin Shoppe, Rite Aid, Target, Kroger, Publix, Sprouts, Natural Grocers, and most natural products retailers nationwide. There's practically no place where they're not available. They can also be purchased online, including on Amazon. The Spry Dental products are available at Wegmans, Vitamin Shoppe, Sprouts, Farmers Markets, Natural Grocers, and most all natural market retailers. And they can also be purchased online, including on Amazon, but also at xlear.com. Clear is the name, the X for xylitol. So good stuff. Let's pause because we got more to talk about. I want to focus on some of the latest research on the approach to preventing respiratory infections. There's some news that we want to share with our listeners when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today's guest, Nathan Jones from Clear, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.